A podcast of the cinema.
Who are you?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
You're the Coffin Alonzo Duraldi.
I had a little
tickle. Coffin Alonzo. Coffin, Coffin Alonzo.
Yes, I took over for Coffin Joe. Yes, hi. I'm the film reviews editor of The Wrap and co-host of many podcasts, including this one. And you are?
Nobody from nowhere. Dave White. Bon vivant. Produce inventory taker.
Man about apartments.
I really do love making lists of all the produce that's in the crisper. It's what part of my morning was.
Wherever today. You find joy.
Well, it's what I find. It's not about finding joy. It's the finding. It's about not finding shame, because when the produce goes to waste, yes, and I've ruined it and it has to be thrown out because I was too dumb to remember to make it and put it into something
in a timely fashion,
then I feel like, oh, I failed and I threw money into the air out into the street. And I mean, it's only like a couple bucks, but
an entire bunch of cilantro wasted.
A couple bucks adds up if you're throwing out a couple bucks of produce every week, ain't it? Don't it? Isn't it?
I suppose so.
Yes,
waste is bad.
So that was today. This is going to be a stop and start situation today because I've got that. I've got potatoes boiling on the stove. I know it's Tuesday at 11 in the morning, but I have reasons.
Yes.
And then the grocery order is shown up. It just showed up, but I don't go outside for like 10 minutes.
Yes. Until the droplets dissipate.
Until the aerosols dissipate.
Right. We have some breaking news.
Yeah, it's about your face.
We have to talk about that. Yes.
We are. Yes, we do. We do have to talk about it because it's a brand new development, and this is the show that everybody gets to hear, and not just the Patreon podcasts that some people get to hear.
True.
Where we have not only talked about your face, but shown it live on
camera.
But I
say, this is an all-audio podcast, so my face is irrelevant.
How does it feel to have no beard at all?
Not good. Not good. Don't like it. Wouldn't recommend never doing it again. I shaved my face.
You chose this.
I know. I'm not blaming anyone.
You chose.
For the first time path. Since 2002, I thought, I'm going to shave it all off and just see what happens.
Your last haircut was February 14th, 2020.
Correct.
And then about 2 months in, you were like, my beard's getting shaggy. Oh, my hair's getting long. Well, let's just take it all the way.
Yeah, let's see how this goes.
End of the pandemic. What? How long can that be? October, right? All our friends the whole time were like, hey, when do we get to come over and hang out again? Maybe like October? I'm like, I don't know. Probably not. That piece of ish is still going to be the president, and you know he ain't doing a damn thing about this. So I bet you it's not going to be October. Meanwhile, Alonzo's growing a very beautiful, long and big and fluffy beard. And however long it takes, he can keep it. He can have it here in this house. It'll be all for me. All for me to enjoy and love. And a year came along and you said, I'm going to cut my hair and shave off everything, beard and mustache. I want to see my face underneath. What have I become?
Right. While I'm ensconced in this apartment, what better time to sort of like...
The answer is that you became a 53-year-old infant. Because you have a little baby face right now. Want to pinch the cheeks all the time? And well, they're not smooth like the baby ass right now because it was Saturday.
Yes.
When it all came off. And now it's Tuesday and the stubble is happening and the beard is starting to come back in. So I touch the stubble lovingly every day.
My sandpaper rough face.
You know what? I like some sandpaper.
You know, it's funny. I should have known better because our friends Dave and Jason have this entire like art book where it's like every you turn the page and it's like a two-page spread, and on the left is a gentleman with a beard, and on the right is a gentleman clean-shaven. And the beard photo is just always the better-looking one.
Is it the
two.
Same person?
It's a bunch of people, but it is the same person on the left and
what
right.
What I'm saying is on one page
on the left is person X with a beard. On the right is person X without a beard.
I see.
You turn the page and it's person Y.
I would say many, many, many gentlemen look really great with beards. And then there are people who look great no matter what they have. Like, you're super good looking without a beard. You're super good looking with a beard.
You're Henry Cavill's, say.
For example.
Yes.
All right. Then there are people who are not, whose genetics did not cooperate with beard growing. And when they try, it just looks like a disaster on their face. I know this from experience. As
it's
I am
a
that
disaster.
Person.
It's invisible. You grow a stealth beard.
That
cannot be seen by the naked eye.
Chin hair grows in a very Billy Goat sort of way.
Mm.
And I remember once in the mid-2000s sort of saying to myself, let's take this as far as it can go.
Right.
And I did. And I hate everyone in my life, all my friends, maybe even you, for not telling me how insane and bad I looked during those. It was about 2 years where I was just sort of like, yeah, I'm just taking the facial hair to wherever it goes. And everyone was like, oh, it's fine. And no one said to me, you know what? It looks like garbage and trash. And you should not be doing this.
It did
this.
Not look like garbage and trash.
And then
it does not look as good as mustache only.
Clean shaven, which for me, clean shaven on the face is like put a little milk on it, let a little kitten come lick it off my face. Like that's what I get in terms of beard.
Yeah.
All over my face, in spite of the chin growth.
You grow down.
My mustache, however.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
Yes.
It came all the way in, and I liked it, and I kept it.
Your mustache is not here to play games.
Everybody seems to enjoy it. You told me you liked it so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I finally learned how to maximize my beauty.
There you go. Well, I don't...
You...
I don't like what's looking back at me in the mirror.
Oh, it's adorable.
And my face hurts.
That is the part that I approve of in terms of you wanting to never shave again.
Yes.
Now, I love you with a big beard.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, you're soft.
You have a new roommate. That's what
you're
like
soft
right
ball of butter on top of your neck.
It's
cute.
I look like my next oldest brother gone to seed.
No, gone to Baskin Robbins.
There you go. Yes. If my next oldest brother didn't stop working out and ate a lot
I just registered what you said. You have a new roommate.
Yes.
You shut up.
But yeah, also, no, and this is a genetic thing. When my father served in the Spanish Air Force, he actually had like a special medical dispensation to not have to shave every day because he was so sensitively skinned and prone to bleeding. And I am too. Not fun.
It's a family of
but
soft faces.
He never had a beard. He was mustache only like you.
Right. No, I met him, as you may recall.
I know, but I'm just saying, but I'm saying for his entire life,
right?
Never a beard.
Yeah,
I guess I don't know if it just wasn't done.
Did he just shave and bleed and shave and bleed?
I guess. Well, he used a Norelco, which I guess worked for him.
Oh, worked for him.
Those. Oh man, that was even worse than the
Yankee,
blade.
Those yank the hair right out of your face.
I felt like I had.
Those are not blades. Those are just little pullers.
Yeah, I had like I felt like I had ground chuck on my face when I used those.
That's why in those old commercials for when we were children, Santa Claus is riding it as a sled and not using it on himself.
Oh, yeah, no. You don't see the mulch that's being left behind it. The face Zamboni. There's actual breaking news in the just moments before we began recording.
What's that?
The Writers Guild of America announced their nominations for this.
How is this as interesting as your beard? How am I to be, how will I be forced to pay attention to this information?
Because,
you know, in a way that will compel me as much as your face does.
Well, because one of the nominees is a film we're about to talk about. Because award season is nonsense, but
Barb and Star for Best Picture.
I give a little more credence to the guilds because at least, like, you know, it's only writers voting on writers and it's only actors voting on actors, which is not to say they can't, they don't have their own sort of prejudices and, you know.
Oh. We have some friends in the Writers Guild. And there are times when they say things to me that they're like, oh, this is perfect and this is garbage. And I'm like, that's funny. I think exactly the opposite.
Yes. Well, there's that also. You know, are they inclined?
I never argue with them. Are they, I just go, uh-huh.
Yeah. Are they inclined?
Tell me more.
Are they talking most writing or best writing? You know. Anyway, I just thought I would share in case people were interested. So
and the person who thinks we're talking about them,
yes,
right now, it's not you.
You're talking about someone who doesn't listen to the show?
Yeah.
Well, then the heck with that. So, nominated for original screenplay are Judas and the Black Messiah, which we'll be getting into momentarily, Palm Springs, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal,
yeah,
and The Trial of the Chicago Seven.
I'm on board for all of those. Trial of the Chicago 7 is...
Sorkin is the kind of writer that writers like because he's writing so much. The writing is so prominent in the overall production. I can see where they're like, yes, more of that, please.
There are moments in the Chicago 7 movie that I...
Sure.
...that I liked, but okay.
Adapted. Borat's subsequent movie film.
All right. What's that adapted from?
Based on characters.
I see. Blah, blah, blah. Can you adapt your own thing?
If you do a sequel, that's automatically an adaptation.
Because it's not an original. I don't know the rules. I don't know how they work. Okay.
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Okay.
News of the World.
All right.
Have you seen that?
I have still never watched News of the World.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe I will sometime.
All right. One Night in Miami.
Yep.
And The White Tiger.
Oh, which I still haven't watched.
Yeah. And then they also do...
But I'm more interested in watching The White Tiger than News of the World.
I stand behind that.
Okay.
They also nominate documentaries because, you know, documentaries are written in the editing room. You know?
Yes, yes.
So, we've only seen one of these.
What?
All In, The Fight for Democracy.
Okay.
The Dissident.
Wait, we saw All In?
I didn't know.
Didn't we?
I didn't. Maybe you did.
I thought we did. All right, go on.
Stacey Abrams one.
Oh, that's a different one.
Yeah, we haven't seen that.
Okay.
The Dissident. Herb Alpert Is.
All right.
Red Penguins.
Okay.
And Totally Under Control.
We saw Totally Under Control.
Correct. So we have some catch up to do, I guess.
Oh. You're right. Pause this recording so that I can now turn off the potatoes.
Stop those potatoes.
I gotta stop the potatoes, and I got to bring in the groceries.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll be right back. And we are back.
We are.
The potatoes were stopped.
I stopped them before they killed again.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about the current cinema?
Let's.
Let's begin with the serious-minded film of the week.
Okay.
Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yes.
It's from filmmaker Shaka King,
mm-hmm.
who has done a lot of TV up until this point.
Yeah, this is
Shrill and High Maintenance.
Right, it's his second feature. Did a film called Newly Weeds,
which
I have
not seen. Have not seen that one. But this is second feature,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I don't know how good Newly Weeds was, but this is quite the follow-up.
It's very assured.
It stars Daniel Kaluuya as Black Panther Fred Hampton.
Mm-hmm.
It also stars Lakeith Stanfield as a guy named Bill O'Neill. Jesse Plemons plays an FBI guy, and Dominique Fishback, who has been in The Deuce and
The Hate U Give.
Hate U Give. And she plays, in the course of this narrative, her name is, the character
the real life person. Her name is Deborah Johnson. Mm-hmm. She has since changed her name to Akua Nijeri. And wrote about the entire story that unfolds in this film, a book called My Life with the Black Panthers. I think that's the name of it. Anyway, it came out in the 90s. It's out of print, hard to find. But it's a very, you know, it's her first person account of what happened, particularly the night that the FBI
assassinated
Fred Hampton in their home while she was lying next to him.
Yeah, and 8 months
how
pregnant.
How she survived, I don't even know, but like it was just a miracle that she did.
Yeah.
So this is a true story. As I said, Fred Hampton, who is a character in Trial of Chicago 7.
Well, I mean, Bobby Seale is the one who's on her. Yes. Fred Hampton does pop up.
But he pops up in the behind. He's sitting behind him in the, in the courtroom. Fred Hampton was the leader of the Chicago Black Panther Party and had been, and he was young. He was murdered by the FBI when he was 21 years old.
Yes.
But in that span of time, from age around 10 till then, he was nonstop, like, the teen activist. I did some reading about him, and I want to read more about him because I knew enough. Mm-hmm. Going into this, I knew who he was, I knew what he had done, and I knew what the FBI had done to him. But things I didn't know about him, like when he was 10 years old, he started cooking breakfast for other kids in the neighborhood who didn't have food.
Wow.
So like...
Which would then become a cornerstone of the Black Panther program.
Yes. So like all... And he brokered deals between Chicago gangs to like come together and you know... work on like social justice rather than, you know, fighting each other.
Yeah, they in the film they show that, and it's basically he was Rainbow Coalition way before Jesse Jackson got there.
No, he was the originator of the Rainbow Coalition.
Yeah.
Like literally the guy who started it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that he was destroyed by the United States government at such a young age, that's enough to make you furious. And then to think about what this man would have accomplished in his life as an activist, as a person who was strenuously day in, day out, organizing and working for change in the world. What might have happened because of him had he not been murdered?
This is an interesting film to look at
by the country that was supposed to, you know, respect his life and his liberty.
Exactly. This is an interesting film to look at in the context of MLK FBI, which just came out a few weeks ago, which is very much about Hoover's, J. Edgar Hoover's campaign against Martin Luther King to try and discredit him, to wiretap him, to surveil him, to, you know, to bring down his reputation. J. Edgar Hoover caused so much damage in this country when it comes to like the fact that there was a civil rights movement at all in the 1960s.
Yeah.
Because he did everything possible to murder or discredit or just in some way or other eliminate everybody responsible for trying to make that happen. He was so committed to white supremacy and so afraid of black people as being like a wave of communism that was going to come in and undo the country.
Right.
He's just despicable.
And he was not remarkable in that idea.
True.
White.
He was not an outlier.
White people in that time, white people now.
Yeah.
Were of a mind, no. We have to be in charge or else it's chaos and possibly communism. That was the thinking.
Yeah. To see this.
And you still hear it coming from the Republicans yesterday.
Oh, I know.
Today.
How much of the response to January 6th has been like, yeah, but Black Lives Matter? Like, what about those broken windows?
Those communists, those socialists, they are constantly talking about Black Lives Matter movement and Antifa as communists and socialists.
Yes, and as though those were interchangeable
and
things.
Yeah, yeah. And it's bonkers that people still fall for it.
Yeah.
But they do. Anyway, this film is primarily about the last couple of years of Hampton's life. It's not a biopic in the formal sense.
No.
It's about the man named Bill O'Neill. Wait a second, I've already lost his name. Bill O'Neill was a car thief.
Yeah.
This is the character played by Lakeith Stanfield. He's a car thief, gets caught, and it just so happens that his, you know, way of stealing cars was to pose as an FBI guy.
Yeah.
And scare people. And in his words, he says, a gun is less frightening than a badge.
Right.
So he'd flash his FBI badge, fake FBI badge, and steal a car right out from someone's nose and just say, look, I'm confiscating this because it's stolen and you can't do anything about it. Well, he gets caught stealing the car this one time. And the FBI brings him in and says, hey, guess what you're going to do for us?
Yeah, you're facing not only the car theft rap, but an additional like 5 years for impersonating a federal officer.
Yeah.
Unless
you cooperate with us and become an informant with the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
So we're going to put you in and you're going to report back to us on what's going on. So trapped in this situation that he had, you know, found himself in, if he didn't want to go to prison, he had to impersonate a Black Panther, get close to Fred Hampton, and then inform the FBI about everything. This helped the FBI sow mistrust between the Black Panthers and other allied groups. They did everything they could to discredit the Black Panthers, to destroy their offices. Like, they blew up their offices at one point. And there were, you know, every step of the way, anything they could do to ruin the mission of the Black Panthers, which involved a lot of free breakfasts and free healthcare for children in the neighborhood. I mean, that's really what... often was happening. Education.
Yes. Obviously, the Panthers
also were, they were total communists, but you know what? Good.
And they believed in arming themselves, which, you know, this was at a
freaked
time,
out.
Yeah.
White people.
You want to find out when white people, like when conservative white people liked gun control, it was when the Black Panthers were arming themselves.
Right.
That was when it was suddenly like, no. Yeah. And in fact, again, to this day.
Yes.
You look at the Philando Castile case, had a license, open carry, all that stuff, killed by a cop, NRA is silent.
Yes.
You know, so it's a that if people try to tell you that gun control is not a race issue, they are lying to you.
Right. Or if they try to tell you that anything has changed.
Oh yeah.
Then they're also lying to you or misinformed. Anyway, it culminates in the, you know, historical fact of Fred Hampton's assassination.
Yes.
There are, I guess you could say, some spoilers. I mean, not really if you go look it up, because...
I mean, it is all history.
My question along the way was, well, whatever happened to Bill O'Neill?
Oh, well, you find out.
And then you do find out at the end. And I guess I won't spoil that. That's what you can... I mean, it's, again, it's historical record, but... this is a very good film.
It is. And shocking that a major studio made it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because it is, as I was saying on Breakfast All Day, it is not radical in its form, but it's definitely radical in its content.
It is a showcase for radical ideas about, you know, social change, about Black self-determination, about...
Not even, malfeasance is too weak a word.
Telling the truth about government crimes.
Yeah.
That's
a conspiracy.
That's what this is. These are crimes. The government, United States government, committed crimes, and they did so against their own people.
Yeah.
And they perpetrated, you know, what has been an ongoing, you know, genocidal mindset since the end of slavery.
Yeah. I think King is a really effective storyteller. He doesn't change the rules or rewrite the map of this sort of historical film the way that like Steve McQueen does in Mangrove.
Right.
But it has that same sense of genuine urgency. And it doesn't yes. it doesn't feel like the kind of safe historical retelling that we so often get, especially in movies that come out around this time of year and right. hope to get awards notice.
Right.
This feels this crackles, I think, is yep. a way to put it. It feels very vibrant and vital.
And information that it dispenses alone is enough to get you like feeling everything that it wants you to feel.
Absolutely.
If it had been less well made, that might have been diminished, but it's really solid. And I think Daniel Kaluuya is great as Fred Hampton.
Absolutely.
Lakeith Stanfield is here I am talking about Academy Awards. He will probably be nominated for an Academy Award for this because he is so tormented throughout.
Yeah.
And you see it all just on his face.
Because he is the character who's conflicted. Like, Fred Hampton is always on the path of what he believes to be true. The FBI guys are certainly on the path of what they believe to be true.
Yes.
And he's the one who's sort of caught in the middle and, like, at first purely just an opportunist and, like, fine, I'll do this to keep out of jail. But the longer that he spends with the Panthers, the more he comes to realize how important what they're doing is and the implications of what he's doing to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some complaints online that Kaluuya is too old to be playing Fred Hampton.
Oh, of course he is.
Which, yes, of course he is. But it's still, it's a very dynamic performance. I mean,
how old is Daniel Kaluuya? It was like 30,
probably,
maybe
in that neighborhood.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's the kind of thing where like,
so was Gabriel Carteris on 90210.
Well, what I was going to say, actually sort of akin to that, was does it become that thing where if you cast someone who is the actual age of the real life historical character, how do you not make that look like the CW version of history? Like, yeah. like, you know, we're used to seeing in certain, you know, genres, like, no, we're younging it up. Like, no, but he really was.
He really 20, was very you know? Young. Yeah. Also, you know, who's wonderful in this film? Dominique Fishback.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly in the early scenes where she's falling in love with him and he's falling in love with her, and she's not impressed with him. Or at least what she's doing is letting him know that he has to work for her.
Yes.
That she is not going to be swayed by his charisma and the fact that he's like the leader of the Black Panthers. She's like, no, you will learn about me. And then I will decide.
And it's not just the deal where like she's supportive of him. It's like, no, she's actually telling him stuff that somebody needs, that he needs to hear.
Yeah.
To, and then that impacts the way he addresses crowds, the way he talks to other, you know, potential allies.
Right.
And is like, so that makes her sort of a fundamental piece of the puzzle of the things that he's trying to accomplish.
Yes. And I've heard, and haven't looked into this very deeply yet, but I will, that some people are concerned that the women in the Black Panthers are not given enough credit in this particular narrative, in this film, that they were more, you know, integral than they're it's definitely sort of like supporting characters here.
Yeah.
And I would like to know more
sure
about that, because if that is the case, then that would be, you know, something that should have been done differently. But yeah. I don't know the answer.
I mean, also you have to remember, like, this is one chapter of like a nationwide organization.
Yes.
And even within just the Illinois chapter, the main story here is, you know, is O'Neill having to get close to Hampton to bring Hampton down. So I will say, to its credit, you do see women involved in like when they're negotiating allyships with, you know, other groups and stuff. They're not just there, you know, making the breakfasts, you know, they're actively involved.
So, where is this streaming?
It is on HBO Max
okay.
For a few weeks, and it is in theaters where there are theaters.
Don't go to theaters.
But you know, it is one of the Warner Brothers movies where it's 30 days on HBO Max and then eventually goes to streaming.
I see. So after its month on HBO Max, people without HBO Max can
be able
stream
to rent it, I guess.
If they have the internet. You know.
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
Shall we,
Yes, we shall.
Yes.
We shall.
Okay.
We shall.
Shall it then. Gene Shalit's
Film Movement Plus.
Yep.
They're sponsoring this episode.
Mm-hmm.
They are a streaming service with lots and lots and lots and lots and lots, all the lotses of independent foreign documentary films that don't get enough attention from the mainstream cinema world. Here they are on Film Movement Plus, including one that I completely missed when it came out in 2007. Called Love Comes Lately. You know, I was thinking, I was writing for movies.com at the time. I'm wondering why I didn't get to see this one. From Jan Schutte. I'm sorry if I'm screwing up that name. This film was at Toronto. It was at Sundance. And it is a story of an old man played by... Why is my phone on? I don't want to talk to you. Whoever you are. Unidentified number. Scam likely.
Bah.
Sorry, Film Movement Plus, for my phone interruption there. Anyway, Otto Tausig, he's an Austrian actor. He's since passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Plays an old man who loves love. And he is pursuing a love life wherever he can, however he can. However, there is a woman in his life that he neglects. So this is a contradiction in his life. It's based on short stories, The Briefcase, Alone, and Old Love by Isaac Mashevis Singer.
Huh.
I've read Old Love. I haven't read The Briefcase or Alone. And it also stars Barbara Hershey, Elizabeth Pena,
Tova Feldshuh,
Rhea Perlman. So I'm going to watch this. How did I miss it? That's the thing I don't even understand.
So many movies.
What else they got? You know something.
Yeah, they've got The Accountant, which I'm very psyched about.
It won an Academy Award.
It won an Academy Award, which is not in and of itself, you know, a thing. But this is a film from 2001.
It's more of a thing for, like, the live-action shorts and the animated. It's more of a thing for that. Like, there's less
big studio jockeying.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like
a little more of a meritocracy.
Yeah. When those win the awards, I think, that's probably pretty good. Like,
this is true.
Best Picture. Come on now. But like,
you're right. Best live action short, that it is more of a feat.
Correct. So continue.
So this is a film that comes from actually two actors who since 2001 we have seen a lot of in movies.
Yes.
It's written and directed by Ray McKinnon, who you may know from Deadwood, from Mud. He's in News of the World. You know, he was in Ford versus Ferrari. He's a that guy. You see his face, you're like, oh yeah, him. And then Walton Goggins, one of my favorite.
Everybody loves Walton Goggins.
One of my
Goggins.
Favorite villains of late. Yeah. He's always so good at that. He and Ray McKinnon are the leads.
Goggins, he's a great comedy villain too.
He is. Yeah. Oh yeah, like he's the best thing in Fat Man, that Mel Gibson movie. I love Walton Goggins. Anyway, so Ray McKinnon wrote and directed it. Walton Goggins produced it. They're both in it. And this was very much an Atlanta production. I remember my friend Kurt Holman wrote a lot about it for Creative Loafing at the time and did a big piece on it. Again, lately it seems like in the last couple of years there's been a company that will release the nominated shorts, like in theaters or I guess now streaming. You can actually get the whole package of like all the animated films, all the short docs, the short, you know, live action films. 2001, a little trickier to come by. So you may have never seen The Accountant, and you should, and it's on Film Movement Plus.
Hey, you took French in high school. Can you read that up top there?
Laissez les bons temps rouler.
Yeah, I'm not good at saying French words very well.
You know what it means?
Let the good times roll.
Let the good times roll.
That's why I can translate some stuff, but don't ask me to speak.
Mardi Gras coming up.
They've got today is
today Mardi Gras?
Today's Mardi Gras.
Oh, it's how much attention
it's
I
the
16th.
Well, you know how I know.
How do you know?
I woke up to Nigella Lawson's Instagram feed where she says it's Pancake Day.
Aha!
And I was like, oh, Mardi Gras.
I mean, you know, it's not always February 16th.
I know, but today it just happens to be Mardi Gras. Anyway, there are three Louisiana music documentaries on Film Movement Plus from director Robert Mugmouge. I've never been able to say his name right. Anyway, one's called New Orleans Music in Exile. One is called Rhythm and Bayous.
Yeah.
One is called The Kingdom of Zydeco.
All right.
And he's a great He is great at documenting that music from Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, musicians get old, they die. And so this stuff preserves their work. I haven't seen Kingdom of Zydeco, but now it's on my list because you know what's great?
Mm-hmm.
Zydeco.
Well, tonight, while you
every time I've ever heard Zydeco, I think, I have no idea who this is, but I'm going to bounce around now. Yeah.
Tonight, when you are making me some boiled crawfish and a king cake, you can be listening to those documents.
That's not what you're getting for dinner tonight.
Bummer.
You're getting lentils.
Not even pancakes?
Eggplant. No. Well, I used the blueberries for the muffins. Anyway, Film Movement Plus, do they have a thing?
They do.
Please talk about
they
it.
They do.
For this ad's going on for 20 minutes.
For listeners of this podcast, you get a 30-day free trial plus 50% off your first three paid months. Use promo code KNIFE at checkout, KNIFE, when you go to filmmovementplus.com. You know that there's a Zydeco song.
We have to shorten these ads.
They like the spontaneous nature.
There is
a Zydeco song called Duraldi Waltz. Because there is a town in Louisiana called Duraldi.
I don't want to know why.
It's a branch of my family that far predates my parents emigrating.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar.
Yes, they do. I'm already seeing, the immediate reviews were mixed, and I'm already seeing some blowback from people who it was built up too much for them. And what? I have to say, I went in with a little
a
little bit of skepticism.
Talk.
So go in with skepticism, y'all. That's always the best
whatever.
Way to go.
Just all right.
Because this, you know, I was skeptical because A, this movie's been knocking around for a bit, and B,
well, we saw the posters were up at the ArcLight for this movie in early 2020.
Yeah, it was supposed to come out.
Like, it was supposed to come out in the summer, and they had the posters up already.
Right. Now, obviously, this is a time in which release dates getting pushed back means nothing because so many have. But also, the embargo for this movie, where, you know, reviews were not allowed to run until, was at like 6 p.m. on Thursday for a movie that opened Friday. And that's usually a big red flag of like, we're trying to keep radio silence about this until the last possible minute.
I betcha that they were nervous about what critics would think of it.
I could see that.
And then in turn, what audiences would think of it.
Sure.
Because it's such a goofy, goofy, goofy movie.
It is a very absurdist comedy.
Yeah.
And it
would
works.
You like to hear who it's from and who's in it?
There you go.
I'm going to tell you. Josh Greenbaum is the director.
First feature film. Non-fiction feature. Fiction feature film.
Okay. Patrick Bristow from Showgirls.
Yes.
Thrust it. Mm-hmm. That's Patrick Bristow.
And from Ellen.
And just the Groundlings, and he's hilariously funny.
Yes, Puppet Up.
Jamie Dornan, mm-hmm. Kristen Wiig. I'm just reading down the IMDb list.
Kristen Wiig and why am I blanking on her first name?
May I continue,
please,
and I'll tell you her first name? Annie Mumolo. All right.
Their first screenplay since Bridesmaids.
Okay. It's also got Ian Gomez, Wendy McClendon Covey, Vanessa Bayer, Fortune Feimster, Phyllis Smith from The Office, Rose Abdu,
woo-hoo,
our lovely friend Rose Abdu,
yes,
Michael Hitchcock, and wait, now I'm scrolling down, am I missing anybody? Damon Wayans Jr.
Yes.
And that's everybody that I can think of right now. Explain what this film is about.
Okay, Barb and Star are best friends.
The best.
They live together. They spend all day talking to each other, and they're constantly delighted.
Their one bedroom has two double beds.
Yes.
So they can always have their own place to sleep, but always talk to each other
exactly
at any time of the day or night.
Like, they work together in a furniture store, and one will come in on their off day just to hang out with the other one. Because all they do is sit on a couch and talk all day. And they try to talk people out of buying that couch because they like to sit on it. So a couple things happen in their lives. Well, one's a widow, one is divorced. The furniture store closes. They are their social group is something called Talking Club.
The Talking Club, yes.
And they get kicked out of Talking Club. And so they decide it's time to shake things up. A friend of theirs has just come back from Vista Del Mar,
Florida.
A Florida paradise for middle-aged people. and highly, highly recommends it. So they decide, all right, what the heck? We're going to go to Vista Del Mar. Little do they realize, Vista Del Mar is about to be the site of a horrifying plot being cooked up by a mad scientist, also played by Kristen Wiig. She's going to destroy the city with lethal mosquitoes during the annual seafood jam. And she has sent her henchman, Jamie Dornan, to lay down the transmitter that's going to attract the mosquitoes. Jamie Dornan is madly in love with the mad scientist. She is clearly not into him and only semi-successful at hiding that fact.
She's using him to get the job done.
Exactly.
Yes.
So their first night in Vista Del Mar, they meet up with Barb and Star meet up with Jamie Dornan Edgar is his name. At the bar, they share a big tropical drink that happens to have like three secret pills at the bottom of it, and they have a wild night together. And now Barb and Star are in love with the same guy, and for the first time, they feel a little bit of rivalry.
Yeah,
and they're lying to each other for the first time,
right?
Because they're so close. And as Edgar falls in love with Star, the mad scientist sends a follow-up guy to help out, a guy named Darley Bunkle. Was that his name?
Damon Wayans Jr. plays a spy whose name is, sorry, I have to scroll down again, Darley Bunkle.
Darley yeah. Bunkle, who is the worst spy imaginable in that he can't stop blurting out his name, his
stuff.
Height, his weight, yeah. his address, and his social security number. Like the worst secret keeper ever. This movie is total nonsense and it knows it. And it just lives in this sort of like cloud cuckoo land of just absurdity. And it's hard to maintain this kind of thing for 90 minutes. There are a lot of movies, I think, that have tried. A lot of the David Wayne films, I think, want to be this, but
yes.
run out of steam. So as dumb as the Lethal Mosquito plot is, it does give it a plot, and it yeah. gives them some stakes, and it gives it something to sort of structure all the sort of loony pants jokes off of. And it's just this big, colorful ball of bananas, and I loved it.
For me, this film is in the tradition of movies like Romy and Michelle,
mm-hmm.
Baps, Dude, Where's My Car, where you've got two very close friends.
Yeah, Bill and Ted.
Who only care about each other.
Yeah.
Like nothing really else matters in their life except the other one. And to varying degrees, there are, you know, nonsensical things taking place. And in this movie, quite often, like in Dude, Where's My Car, absolute absurdity. You know, you've got a talking crab. You've got musical numbers that pop up in the middle of nowhere. You've got culottes that become parachutes. People on jet ski, like a child who's a henchman on a jet ski.
In a submarine.
In a submarine. And once you've gotten in about 10 minutes, you know if it's for you or not.
Yeah,
here's the thing. Comedy, if it is competently made,
yeah.
becomes a matter of taste. Now, I'm not talking about things like the epic movies, which are incompetently made.
Yes.
I'm talking about, you know, a film like, any of the Wayne films.
Yeah, or the Lonely Island movies. Like
Red Hot American Summer, the Lonely Island movies. If they are competently executed films,
yeah.
they are either for you or not for you.
Yeah, like I love Hot Rod. I don't think Popstar is all that great.
But, I love Hot Rod and I love
yeah,
Popstar.
It becomes very subjective.
And so films that traffic in like wild implausibility or even utterly fantastical elements, such yeah. as this film does, it either hits you right or it doesn't hit you right. You're either in the mood for it or you're not in the mood for it. I've already read a review of this film where the critic said something like, this is where comedy goes to die. And I was like, or maybe you just didn't get enough sleep the night before. Maybe you were in a bad mood.
Well, this is the flip side of the conversation that we had about the Borat sequel.
Yes.
Where a lot of people loved that movie.
And we were both sitting there with our arms folded, so angry at the state of the United States.
Yeah.
That
We were not in a place to take it in.
I wasn't. Yeah, I was not in the mood for Rudy Giuliani on camera to be a joke.
Yeah,
he's such a monster that I couldn't see him as a figure of comedy delivery.
Yeah,
I could be wrong about that. Maybe I'm wrong about the second Borat movie.
Maybe you know, a few years after the pandemic ends, we circle back on that movie. Like, oh, okay, now I get it. Now
I feel pretty burned on this whole.
Okay, maybe not.
Presidency. I don't know how long it's going to take for me to, you know.
Nonetheless,
find any of it funny anymore.
I see what you're saying.
But we love this. There are moments where there are sequences in this film where I wasn't laughing, where I felt like it might start to lose me, mm-hmm. but then something goofy would come along and I would start laughing again.
Yeah, so, not every joke landed with me for sure, but I was always just so interested at what they were going to toss at me next, what was lurking around the next corner,
yeah.
that I stayed with it.
Yeah.
And those moments were relatively few and certainly didn't like color my judgment in terms of like, by the time it was over, I was like, you know, I was all in.
I was having a conversation with friend Elizabeth over text.
Mm-hmm.
And she sent me three pictures. One of Scott Eastwood, one of Jamie Dornan,
mm-hmm.
and one of a tree stump. And she said, who is the most expressive? And I said, all right, I'm going to tell you the truth. I know the answer to this. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to lay it out. Scott Eastwood is a lump.
Mm. So far, anyway.
Prove it to me otherwise, Scott Eastwood. Jamie Dornan was unfortunately cast.
Yes.
As a block of wood.
As a lump.
In the 50 Shades movies.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's something going on with him, and he's going to stick with us for the long haul.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is so ready for this movie, and he's so fun to watch be this wide-eyed, like, ridiculous person who frequently wants to have sex in broad daylight with Kristen Wiig, and she's like, yeah, let's do this many more times. Like, it's a wide open space. And I'm
he is tonally just right for
yes.
this movie. Like like Will Ferrell would have played this all wrong.
Right.
He would have been too winky or too somehow in on the joke.
Right.
Jamie Dornan is like brings just the right amount of earnestness to this so that when he breaks into a musical number and is singing to seagulls,
yes.
it's hysterically funny.
Yeah.
We didn't watch
for us.
Yeah, exactly. if you find this funny. We didn't watch that British show where Gillian Anderson plays the detective and he's the serial killer. But I hear he's really Fall. I yes. hear he's really good in that.
I watched the first two episodes of it with the intention of watching the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
and then I got sidetracked. But those first two episodes, pretty good.
Yeah, he's good in it, right?
He's a bad man in
right.
it. Yeah.
And, you know, like, we, despite everything, we're sort of entertained by Wild Mountain Time.
I will not apologize. I will not apologize for Love and Wild Mountain Time. It's bad. It is a dumb and bad movie, and I love it.
So yeah, I'm
come fight me.
I'm not here to cast aspersions on Jamie Dornan. I think he can do things, and he will do things. And then the other movies this week you did not watch.
You have exactly 3 minutes to discuss both of them.
So yeah, because last week was Valentine's Day, we got two big YA movies. The fun one is Netflix's threequel to All the Boys I've Loved, to All the Boys: Always and Forever.
All right,
which brings us to the finale of the Lara Jean trilogy. And her adorable teen romance with
Baby Mark Ruffalo.
With Baby Mark Ruffalo, a.k.a. Yeah. Noah Centineo.
Yeah.
So this time it's their senior year in high school. They're college bound. Peter has a scholar, a lacrosse scholarship to Stanford. She's waiting here. She's gotten accepted. And, you know, she's imagined this whole like life they're going to have together, but then she doesn't get into Stanford. It's like, oh no. But then she gets into Berkeley and it's like, okay, great. That's only like an hour away. But then there's a class trip to New York City and she falls in love with New York City and she falls in love with NYU. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I want to go to college on the other side of the country from my boyfriend.
Right.
What to do?
And you should always do that.
Oh, yes. I would recommend it.
Never go, young people, or any of you listening, if you have a significant other in high school and you graduate, spend the summer between high school graduation and the beginning of college having lots of sex and then break up and say, look, if it was meant to last, if it's in the stars,
yes,
if it is our destiny, in 4 years,
we'll still be here.
We'll still feel the same way about each other.
Yeah.
You can even hook up over the holidays. Christmas break, spring break, summer break, whatever.
Yeah.
But break up. Please break up.
Yeah.
Because it ain't going to last.
Meet other people.
Through college.
I do. I have one good friend who is married to his high school sweetheart, and they are exceedingly happy. But they are unicorns.
I know of two heterosexual couples who were high school sweethearts.
Yeah.
And who are still married.
Okay. And I take it back. I know one straight couple and one gay couple. That go back to when they
you know
were
a gay couple that have they were high school boyfriends or
I
girlfriends?
I don't know if they went to high school together, but they were like they met when they were like 18, 19, and they were together like 20 years later.
20 Golly, 25.
Yeah, but again, unicorns.
Yes.
Anyway, the To All the Boys
that
movies
was just some interrupting the film review for some life advice.
Yes, the To All the Boys movies are very fun, aspirational teen movies. They're glossy and, you know, poppy, and they're like John Hughes movies without the problematic contents.
Oh, well, yes.
If you're a fan of these, you'll like this third one. You know, they're cute. If you need something to put on while you're babysitting a 12-year-old, like, put these movies on.
Do 12-year-olds have babysitters?
Okay, maybe a 10-year-old.
A 10-year-old.
All right, they're charming.
Maybe. Okay.
And then The Map of Tiny Perfect Things, which is on Amazon Prime, which is fine.
What's it about?
Well, it is basically another Groundhog Day, Palm Springs, temporal anomaly setup. Happy Death Day.
Only not
12 Days of Christmas.
All right.
12 Dates of Christmas.
12 Dates of Christmas.
12 Dates of Christmas.
All right.
It starts out with this guy who has been doing this day over and over again, like he knows all that's going to happen. He's always sort of looking for the little things to change. And then he runs into a girl who is also caught in the same time loop. And they have to sort of figure out, you know, how do they get out? Do they want to get out? What does that involve? You know, and we come to find out why this is happening for her. And it's real familiar. There's only so many ways to tell this story. And people have been telling it a lot lately. And Palm Springs does, to its credit, find a new and interesting way to do it. And this is not as interesting as Palm Springs, but it is more like 12-year-old friendly than Palm Springs is. So if you have an audience for that, then I guess great.
Remember last week on the Amber Ruffin show?
Yeah.
When she was trying to get Tarek Davis to explain
the GameStop
shorting situation.
Uh-huh.
And every time he would start, she would drift off and start thinking about other things.
Yes.
I've spent the past 60 seconds thinking about mashed potatoes.
Okay.
Because I don't care.
Okay.
About what
this is. I didn't care all that much either, and I saw it. it is fine. The young performers are good. Catherine Newton from Freaky is the female lead.
Right.
This guy Kyle Allen, who is, you know, it's that thing where he's supposed to be kind of like not a dorky regular guy, but just like very run of the mill. But
does he wear glasses?
No, but he has kind of a tousled hairdo. You know? But there's always the tell.
Rumpled clothes or whatever.
Yeah, but there's always that moment where they lift their arms
that's
a little too much,
right,
and the bottom of the shirt comes
that's
up.
That's right.
And you see the chiseled abs.
Super worked out.
So
gymnasium
average.
Gymnasium attendee.
So average.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fine. It's whatever.
Okay.
We have some letters.
Do we?
Yes.
Do you have a DVD pick of the week?
Oh.
Do you have anything? Got anything? Know anything?
You know what? Because again, we're talking about the FBI and the Black Panthers, I would say go check out From the Journals of Gene Seberg. It is on DVD. It is also, I think, it's on YouTube, which normally I don't send people to, but this is a hard movie to track unless you really look for it. So,
Isaac Julian made a film in the 90s called Franz Fanon, Black Skin, White Mask.
Yes, he did.
Sort of a biopic about Franz Fanon, who was an anti-colonialist thinker, writer, activist, and...
And Fanon's mentioned in Judas
and the Black Messiah. And he is mentioned in Judas and the Black Messiah, which is why I'm bringing it up.
Good call.
And it's also on Film Movement Plus.
What?
Yeah.
What are the odds?
Yep.
All right, then.
Got to give them a little more shout out.
Sure.
Since our ads are so haphazard.
That's what they hire us for.
Do they? Is that why? I don't know why that's...
You don't give us a script, we are just going to go off like this.
Would you like to hear a letter from somebody?
I would love to.
Let me pull one up. Here it is. A letter. I'm vamping. Trying to get it here. Okay, here we go. Lori.
Yes.
Dad needs glasses here. I just stumbled upon a comment in The Guardian about you two. I'm sorry, what?
The Guardian ran a big...
The Guardian, the British
the UK
newspaper.
Paper, yes. Okay, they asked a bunch of podcasters to pick their favorite podcasts. Karina Longworth Waiting to Exhale.
Karina Longworth picked Karen and Winter's show, Waiting to Exhale?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Nice of her.
Okay. I just stumbled upon a comment in The Guardian about you two with an especially fun spelling of Alonzo's name. The article concerned podcasters recommending other podcasts. Now, I don't know who left this. Do we know who left this comment?
I'm going to pull it up because it is someone who clearly listens to the show and who in subsequent comments was like, sorry about the typo. It was a autocorrect
situation.
Well,
here's the comment. Keep It is wonderful, which is true. It is.
It is.
Keep It is wonderful. Our friend Louis Mertel and Ira Madison III and Dave, a new co-host.
They do, and I do not have her name in front of me, but she's great, too.
Funny, but rooted in real activism. I look forward to it every week. If you're after good film podcasts, then you can't go wrong with Alinsey Duralde's... Alinsey. A-L-I-N-S-I. I love that. That's like Khaleesi. Alinsey Duralde's... output, Who Shot You, Linoleum Knife, which he presents with his husband and fellow critic Dave White, makes you wish you could just hang out with them sometime, and a film and a movie which juxtaposes a classic film with a more modern one with thematic ties. That's the comment that was in The Guardian. Now, wait a second. Does this mean we are in The Guardian, or does it just mean that we are a comment on The Guardian website?
We're a comment on The Guardian website.
I'm going to take it as us being in The Guardian.
Absolutely.
We are now, we have been mentioned in The Guardian.
Hooray for us. And I want to say thank you to Human Sadri, who left that comment. And in the first comment, he then corrected it to Alfonso.
That's right.
Again,
getting closer.
This is all autocorrect's fault, not Human's.
No, I know.
Anyway, but that was very, very kind of you to leave that as a comment. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Lori's letter continues. Yes. I just wanted to thank you two for filling my days.
Oh.
I'm in Canada in lockdown. I'm lucky enough to have a full-time union job.
Oh.
In August, I had a tumble and lived 6 months with an undiagnosed fractured femur.
Oof.
Just had hip replacement, and I feel awesome. I'm 53, and I hope that this will conclude my geriatric mishaps for the duration. Listening to you two has been a big coastal elite hug. One day we are coming to Los Angeles to gorge on tacos and stalk you.
And now that you've got a new hips, it's a Boogie Down Productions time.
Yes. That is whatever you meant. I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay. And we have a 5-star review.
Yes.
That are increasingly effusive and embarrassing to me. This one is from Jordan. Most podcasts are in a hurry to hold. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm reading this cold. I read all the letters cold.
I was going to say, as opposed to.
Most podcasts are in a hurry to hold your attention to make sure you stay. Linoleum Knife is not this.
No one's ever accused us of that.
In the best way possible. Okay. This podcast is relaxing, insightful, and always warms my days when I listen. Alonzo and Dave are lovely hosts with great chemistry, they are married, and wonderful, soothing voices. Their opinions are always interesting and well-stated, and there's enough humility in both of them to acknowledge other opinions on things, especially when talking about a film covering an experience they are not familiar with. Most of all, though, I love them because they, at least in podcast form, although I'd be very surprised if it weren't real life too, radiate empathy and love. Their kindness never fails to put me in a good mood, to relax me when I need it, and for that I am so grateful for these wonderful hosts who make all our lives better. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you, Jordan.
I accept your praise.
Just say thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Jordan.
Take the compliment.
God. Glenn, as we've discussed, Glenn Weldon thinks it's tacky to read your own 5-star reviews the show, but we have decided that we like to read them because people leave them and you get to hear your name on the podcast or if that makes you feel good, I guess. And
Glenn's got NPR action going on. He can afford to have, you know, to move past this sort of thing. We're very excited about 5-star reviews.
I am. And at the same time, when I read them, I just feel like, no. I know I've always demanded that you leave a 5-star. If you're going to leave a review at all, it must be 5 stars. Mm-hmm. But I get so embarrassed by being praised in public.
Dave, to love your podcast
is
the greatest love of all.
I know. I'll get over it one day.
There you go.
It's so stupid. I was having this conversation with friend and listener David the other day. Not me. I'm not talking to myself. About how we feel when people praise us. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? In private, I'll soak it up.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Just on the mic, you feel weird about it.
This goes back to my thing of like, I don't want to be making a scene in public. I don't want to be noticed. I don't want to be paid attention to. I don't want you to see me or hear me. I don't even like to have loud conversations with you in public, as you well know.
Yes.
Because I don't want people listening and thinking, who are these a-holes? Like, you know what I mean? And so when someone is saying nice things about me in front of other people, I come unglued. I can't deal with it.
Cope, Dave White.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Y'all are awesome. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the 5-star review. Leave us one on Apple Podcasts. We will read it on the air. It does help people find the show. Please check out the other shows that I do, which would be Breakfast All Day, Who Shot Ya, and A Film and a Movie. And now Mondays on Deck the Hallmark, joining them to talk about non-Hallmark Christmas
movies.
You
are a 5-day-a-week podcast, man.
Pretty much.
Six days a week.
It's probably insane. Oh, and hey, guys, we have a Patreon.
We sure do.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Lots of other content, lots of other fun, exclusive opportunities for subscribers.
You just reminded me I have to post my LKRX today.
You do, yes. Daily recommendations, other shows, club meetings, so much other stuff. Check it out.
Yes.
If you like this nonsense, you'll get more nonsense. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. And also check out our friends on the internet. See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Check out The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comic Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys at the Movies, Big Fat Gay Podcast, The Workroom, Waiting to Exhale, the Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. Do check out Keep It if you haven't listened to that one. You can leave us positive feedback, not just at Apple Podcasts, but all those, also the many places where we stream. like Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com and Spotify, Google Play, Amazon Music, CastBox, Podbean. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on social media at linoleumcast, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Follow him on Twitter at bluetopia.com. Oh, and hey, if you've never listened to A Film and a Movie, this might be the week to check it out, because our episode that drops on Wednesday, our special guest is Mark Harris of Vulture, who has just written a wonderful biography of the filmmaker Mike Nichols called Mike Nichols: A Life. And he joins us to talk about two Mike Nichols films. It's the first time we've connected two films from the same filmmaker. And we discuss Nichols's feature debut, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And one of his final films, Closer, both of which are about two very unhappy couples. And he was a great guest. It was exciting to talk to him. Daniel and I were thrilled to have him on the show. So do check that out. Anyway, have a good week, you guys. Take care of yourselves and each other. And until next time,
goodbye.